Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose Colombo right here for you on Colombo Chronicles Live. And yes, we're all alive, thank God, 6 feet above the ground, so we can be grateful for that. And if you have great weather today, like we do over here on the West Coast in the good old USA, then you're very fortunate and blessed and hope you can enjoy your day, as so many people work from home. And boy, do we have a dynamic guest for you today. And his name is Sharon Koisman. And he wrote the book, Surviving Remote Work. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him and a little more in just a little bit. He is a survivor. He survived the dot-com crash. He survived working with outsourcers that mastered English like fish mastered riding bicycles. And he survived building and leading a completely remote business spanning four continents with two toddlers in the room. Now, you know how difficult that would be. The title of the book is a lie, he says. Sharon Koisman didn't survive remote work. He thrived with remote work. Surviving remote work is the distillation of a decade of lessons. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more before we introduce Sharon Koisman to Colombo Chronicles Live. I hope everyone is doing well. In America, we have so many issues. Well, President Joe Biden went off and left us with all these issues to deal with. I guess he's taken a little brief vacation. If he's not in his basement, I guess he's off to somewhere else and possibly on his new mega yacht, and it's literally, they say, a floating mansion. And you can look that up online, or you can go on MeWe. I posted a photo of it. And sign up and join us on MeWe.com. And I'm telling you, you will not believe this mega yacht. And it is definitely, it looks and appears to be larger than a floating mansion. And we know that Bill Gates has a yacht reported in the news that costs about $659 million. This yacht looks as if it costs even more than $659 million, which is really ironic since all these people sailing around on multi, maybe billion-dollar yachts are telling us how we need to live our lives and sacrifice. Do you remember when Bill Clinton said Americans must sacrifice, and then Obama said Americans must sacrifice and give up their liberties? Well, these people aren't giving up anything. Not one penny, not one yacht, not one mansion, not the farmlands, not the ranch lands they've purchased. They aren't giving up one thing, but everyone else is supposed to give up something. So are you willing to give up something like freedom, liberty, rights? Carry around a vaccine passport, which is unconstitutional, illegal, unlawful, and denies our right to freedom, liberty, and rights and sovereignty? Are we no longer a sovereign nation because we can't jump on a multi-million dollar yacht or a billion dollar yacht and just sail away into the sunset or go underground where the wealthy are protected in their mansions they've been developing underground, or possibly one of the mansions on their private islands where I'm sure they're all wearing masks and distancing and inside and outside of their private islands. So these people are so out of reach with the average American that it is stunning. It is absolutely stunning what is happening in our country and around the world. And, of course, we are the leaders that the rest of the world looks up to. So we need to get back on track and restore the U.S. Constitution as it was intended to originally by our framers, because we deserve to be free, liberated, and sovereign, and we need to continue to preserve and maintain and fight back for freedom for ourselves and for the world. And on that note, be sure to check out Joe Biden's new mega yacht. It's a floating mansion, and boy, is it something else. And go to MeWe.com and check it out. I posted the photo. So now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts in just a moment, and I'll tell you a little bit about our guest, Sharon Koifman. He wrote the book, Surviving Remote Work, after this important message, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up because we're on their trail. We're on their trail to success through remote work. And we have a very special dynamic guest, Sharon Koifman, and he wrote the book, Surviving Remote Work. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Sharon Koifman, obsessed with remote management. He has over two decades of experience running three companies, 100% from his computer. During this time, he learned how to create an amazing work culture, one where people love to come to work. These days, he runs Distant Job, a unique recruitment agency geared specifically for finding full-time remote employees who work from all over the world. He wrote Surviving Remote Work in the wake of the COVID crisis in order to help businesses not only survive, but actually thrive in this new environment. And it is a new environment to most Americans and worldwide. So why don't we just get started and let's find out some of his tips and about his book, Surviving Remote Control. Welcome, Sharon Koifman, to Columbo Chronicles.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're very happy to have you because we are in the world of remote. Everything is remote
we
now.
We certainly
so
are.
So you have a very timely book here that most people will need to read so that they can thrive as well as you have. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, so as you were kind of explaining in my summary, yes, I've been running remote companies for about 20 years. And it's very important to clarify that it's not just me sitting at home running some affiliate program or doing some quick money scheme. I'm talking about running multi-million dollar companies with employees all over the world with real products, real tangible products, and doing it successfully for a long, long time. And these days, I run the first recruitment agency that specializes in remote employees. We are trademarked as a remote recruitment agency across the world, and we go all over the world, find the best and the smartest people that work remotely for North American technology companies. My company is fully distributed also. No, I'm in Canada, in Montreal, Canada. Nobody actually works here beside me, so I work in my super cool office just beside my house. And really, I hope that I keep all my employees across the world very motivated, very excited. And, of course, I wrote a book about it called Surviving Remote Work, which is a best-selling book on Amazon. And I'm excited to share it with the world.
Well, that's fantastic, and congratulations on the best-selling book. And did you always believe you would be successful working from home?
You know, I've never thought that I would even be a remote employee initially. I was always, as you can see by my voice, I'm quite an extrovert, and for me, the dream was to have everything that I have right now. I run a multi-million dollar company, but I dreamed seeing the people shooting Nerf gun at each other, making jokes and doing everything. So no, I've never imagined that I will do all this with people all over the world.
And so what motivated you to realize that you can run a multi-million dollar business around the world?
So the original what inspired me is actually my brother. My father runs an engineering company, which he with machines that literally cost $500,000 to $1 million, and he built them on his computer and just let a machine shop somewhere else cut all the components, and he outsourced it to wherever the location of the machine to a company to put it together. He inspired me. He actually did this way, way before, and I looked at it and I said, this is an opportunity. With more time and more experience, I actually had an appreciation that remote people are actually more productive than local ones, because the misconception is always, well, if you have everybody in the same office, you're going to get more production, more creativity, but I discovered it to be the opposite, and of course, with many, many years of research, really found out that the science is there, that remote people are much better, so I got more and more excited throughout the years.
So knowing that, do you think it's a specific type of person, just like it takes a specific type of person to be successful in business, and even if they fail, they pick themselves up, dust themselves up, and they keep going and learn from their errors? Do you feel that most people, because it's very difficult for people to actually create a successful business, and the statistics prove that out, and do you feel that people working from home will then feel more relaxed and maybe want to go shopping, maybe want to go to the gym for a few minutes or an hour or so, or just watch a soap opera? And do you find that the temptation would be there for a lot of people, and how would they hone that in?
Okay, so there was two components to this question. First of all, yes, I'm a huge believer in building things through mistakes and errors. The cliche statistic, which I still don't know where that statistic come from, but the one that says that 9 out of 10 people fail in business, first of all, there is Again, I don't know where it came from, and I don't know how many of those nine people just registered a business and didn't take it seriously, and we're not serious business people. But the other statistic that they don't mention is, while yes, there might be a possibility that 9 out of 10 people fail on the first business, but only 2 out of 3 fail in the second business. So if you have the resilience to go through failure once or twice, you will eventually succeed based on the statistics out there. 2 out of 3 is not that great either, but going to the third attempt, you most likely will succeed. Now, in terms of remote, yes, you are mentioning all the somewhat small challenges that come with remote, but you're not discussing the challenges of working in an office. Research shows that an average worker produces about 2 hours and 53 minutes in an 8-hour shift. This is in an office working environment. And one of the biggest reasons why this happens is because it takes an individual 25 minutes to get back to focus when he or she are distracted. So if you have meetings, if somebody just taps on your shoulder, your friend in the office, and talks about the great movie that they see, if you hear distracting chit-chat around, all this affects your productivity. And when you go remote, you actually give yourself an opportunity to work in the most optimal working environment, to set up your system the way you like it. If home is too distracting, you can go to a co-working space that is two blocks away. But you do it by your standards, and you eliminate distractions, which those distractions are the number one reason why you're not producing. And that is bigger deal than any potential temptations that you might have, like the fridge or the TV, which again, all those things will be done on your time. So if at least you can get 3 hours of undistracted working time at home, you will be more productive than the average worker in an office, even if you the rest of the time you're watching TV and having snacks.
We're talking to Sharon Kaufman, and he's the author of best-selling Surviving Remote Work. And Sharon, a lot of people have kids at home now, and they aren't in school. How does that affect the person working from home?
So this is without a doubt the biggest challenge that only comes with COVID, not in general remote. This is that there is questions in relation to how to work remotely well and how to work remotely during COVID well. And kids are incredibly, incredibly distracting. I mean, my kids are the center of my world. I do not want to say anything bad, but as awesome as it is for me to have access to my kids at any time that I want now, it also one of the biggest curse to productivity. There are two major suggestions that I mentioned to people. Actually, there's three, but the two major ones are, first of all, if you have a partner at home, your wife, your husband, your whoever it is, we live in a modern world, anybody can be a partner, you need to negotiate with that a person a chunk of undistracted hours. Right, so like I said, people produce only 2 hours and 53 minutes. So if you can negotiate with your partner 4 hours of undistracted time that they take care of the kids at the time and doing whatever else is distracting, you can really get a lot of work done. If you have toddlers, that's the second smaller advice. I actually do recommend I am very much against giving kids to watch movies and TVs all day, but today there's incredible apps to actually educate them and make them more productive. The third bigger advice is you gotta evaluate the worth of your time and calculate it based on help, on whether it's a nanny, whether it's a cleaning person, whether it's a virtual assistant. You got to do the math. How much the time that you get distracted costs you, and then potentially pay for help or have your company fund you for the help, because it might be first of all very tax deductible for them, and it could potentially make you significantly more productive.
Exactly, and the more productive you are, the more you can afford that nanny. So
it's all about productivity, and managers need to understand that, because there's still majority, and this is one of the biggest problems with the remote, there's still managers who calculate work by the amount of time that people sit on their keyboard and tap. But like I said, it's not working, because people are not producing during those hours. They're just checking their social media, or I don't want to say that everybody's cheating in their work, but somehow the pace of productivity is not great if all you're doing is looking at the amount of work, the amount of time you type in on the keyboard, or if you make it down to the office.
So then if you have a remote business where there are employees within your own country or other countries or both, do you need to have meetings every day, even if they're brief, so you're in contact with them, so they're doing their productivity? Because not everyone is able to be productive without someone looking over their shoulder or checking on them.
So I actually find the opposite. So you do need to have a meeting once a week. I find that meetings are some of the most distracting activities you can have in an office. So you have to have them really responsibly. The way that I function in my company, we have KPIs, which means we have a way to measure productivity and to measure how much effort, at least in the recruitment department. It's very clear. We see how many people are being messaged, how many people are interacted with. So it's more important to have a KPI that gives you the ability to evaluate the effort instead of just having checking on your employees and having false promises. The second thing that I do in order to reduce to distraction, I actually use a project management software where they actually get to report to me what are their goals for the day and what is the results that come on a daily basis. I prefer me hanging out with my team to be a social, more culture-building experience than busting their chops about whether they can do a good job or not.
Excellent. So can managing people at all from home, whether it's here in the USA or you're dealing with different languages across the world, can it get messy in any way?
It can get very messy. And first of all, absolutely, it can get messy because, first of all, there's a major challenge with management. I think management is the focus. It's not the people. It is the managers that for too long have been used to just evaluating work by how long does somebody type on the keyboard. And now that they're asked to be real managers, they don't necessarily know how. And remote is an opportunity to just own it and become a better manager. But not everybody gets it. And it really can get very, very messy, especially that it seems like so many managers out there, once they send their people home, it's almost like out of sight, out of mind. So you need to be more proactive. If you're in an office environment, you use the concept, you walk by one of your employees, it's like, oh, okay, I need to check out the door. Hey, George, what's going on? How you doing? But when the person is at home, not such good managers forget about their employees almost, right? And there is mental health challenges, and there's people that are not as excited about working remote, and managers don't know how to deal with that. It's almost like they have to become a little bit more of therapists than they would in a local environment. So there are new challenges for the remote managers. I find always excellent managers to that the transition is super easy for them, but not so excellent managers really do struggle, and nobody's giving them, until they read my book, of course, right? Nobody is giving them the tools and understanding what is the new expectations out of them. And that leads to quite a mess in many operations. And that's why many companies do want to come back, because they've not been proactive with their management of the remote people.
So we're talking to Sharon Koifman, Surviving Remote Work. And what about the people who you do interview? How do you figure out if they're a fit by remote?
So I don't want to answer a question with an answer, but in this case, I have to. How do you know that a person is local, good for you or not? I don't see the difference. You make sure that you have somebody coming on a webcam. You interview him or her exactly how you would interview a local person. The procedures are absolutely the same. The only difference that you need to pay attention to is the misconception that comes with what it means to be a remote employee. So for some remote people, there's a misconception that they can suddenly turn into that contractor, freelancer, consultant mentality. I call them the non-committals. So just the outsourcing industry has created a stigma for the remote employee that makes them look like individuals that are there just to take care of a project and move on to the next project. And those type of people are not fitting very well in a company with a real work culture and a real focus on growth and getting people integrated into their company. So that is the only difference, in my opinion, from a remote person than a local one. You just need to remember to turn on your webcam. No phone conversations, no text chat. Have a real invest in a quality microphone and a quality webcam. Those are cheap things to invest in. I currently use, probably have a professional microphone. I think that my voice, you can tell me if it's true or not, but I have a pretty, my voice sounds pretty professional. I'm just using my headset, which is the Jabra Evolve 75. And by now there's even higher quality headsets for not so expensive. And you use those tools that make the entire conversation really high quality, there shouldn't be any difference.
Well, the reason I asked is because I know someone who's a total extrovert, loves people, loves to go out and meet with people face to face, and now that everyone's pretty much isolated in their homes, which is starting to open up in USA, she found it very difficult to work remotely instead of going out. So she's an extrovert versus an introvert. Do you come across those people that just can't be trained to work remotely and just have to get out into the field and be with people?
So as you can hear by my voice, I'm a real introvert. Now, I hope you appreciate my sarcasm, but because I've had the same challenges. Where it comes to remote, there is always a little bit more proactivity. Now, you, in my opinion, you gain so much more hours in your day. You don't need to travel. You don't need to be stuck in traffic. You're significantly more productive. You gain more hours out of your day when you work remote. What do you need to do with that extra hours? At least half an hour to an hour a day, you should book your social experience at the same way that you book your business meetings. So there is nothing that stops your friend, or me included, because I'm a pretty hardcore extrovert also, to message all the friends that she used to message before. I mean, she probably used to work in an office where she go to lunch with her friends or happy hours or some kind of activity, or even hang out in the water cooler. There's nothing that prevents her from going and messaging and emailing that group and say, hey, let's go for lunch. Hey, let's go for a happy hour. Let's go for a walk. Let's play tennis. Let's do whatever. The challenge is that the moment that you go home, you become lazy. lazy is not a fair word. It's not. That's not nice. You become less proactive. You become so comfortable. Comfortable is the right word. Exactly. You become so comfortable that you forget that you need to get out of the house. So you have to spend half an hour researching restaurants, researching entertaining. Spend the time on your social experience. And suddenly, you're not going to feel so alone or so not active. You can truly replicate everything. During COVID, it's always harder. So that means if the restaurants are closed, maybe the terraces are open. If the terraces are closed, go for a walk, bring people to your balcony. If the balcony are closed, just like here in Montreal, I literally go, I book time with my friends and colleagues, and we grab some food for the walk. I mean, the world will come back to more normal every day. Montreal specifically is an extreme. I mean, they really give us curfew and close down so much. But whatever they give you to do, be proactive about it, invest in your social experience, and you will never think about your office time again. But really, people just go home and they just forget that you can still have a full social life with the same exact people, assuming that you like them. And the great thing is, in an office, you are forced onto people, right? You have to, at least here, you get to pick who you like to hang out with.
That's true. And so one last question I have for you is it possible to protect all your intellectual property and your data online?
Absolutely. I mean, just as good as you can protect your office. So there used to be a saying back in my nerd world that for every security procedure, there's always a hacker. But there is no reason why the hacker should have more access to a VPS than to an office. I mean, they're all connected to the internet. They're all protected by firewall. What a serious company with serious security concerns should do is hire a focused security person or a security company that is not too busy. They really have the time to invest in just closing all the gaps in the network. They should send their own laptops to people, their own computers. So it all becomes part of that closed network, a closed VPS. And if you go by those proper procedures, you are at least as safe as you are in office, if not more.
Very good. And now is your time to shine, Sharon Kaufman. You can give any message you like to our audience, and you can also give any websites or information you'd like for purchasing your book. And now is your time to shine.
Hey, I like shining. So everybody, please pick up my book. It's Surviving Remote Work. It's on Amazon. It's very accessible. We also have a full media company called Think Remote, which every week we tell news about the world of remote and join. And it's a great publication. We invest so much in it. So that's thinkremote.com. And of course, if you need amazing remote programmers and developers and any IT specialists, and you don't mind going to the world, let us go to the world and finding those amazing people, please contact me. It's Sharon, spelled like Sharon, but Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N, at distantjob.com. And that's it.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Sharon Koifman. That is fantastic. It's been a joy talking to you, as well as educational and enlightening and empowerment. And so you made my day, and I'm sure you made the audience day too. Thank you so much, and God bless you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so, so much. Thank you. It was really fun.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And Sharon Koifman has left the building. And be sure to go out and get his book, Surviving Remote Work, best-selling book on Amazon. Check it out and be sure to get it, because you're going to need this information, because remote work, working from home, you need to be successful and thrive so you can pay your bills and maybe even save some money for when the whole country opens up again and the world, we can start taking those cruises or jetting off somewhere and enjoying ourselves once again with our family and friends and fellow Americans and anyone else who you may know around the world and you want to visit. That will be great, won't it? Can't wait. So you want to prepare for that. So be sure to get a copy of Surviving Remote Work. It's Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N, Koifman, K-O-I-F-M-A-N, Amazon.com. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up to Colombo Chronicles Live, because we're entering into the world of politics, the issues of the day. And my issue of the day today is vegan meat. Investor Bill Gates says beef and dairy cattle would rank third in greenhouse gas emissions if they were a country. So he is against cows, pigs, horses, chickens, etc. But there's a reason, because Bill Gates appears to be invested in the food industry. And as we know, when COVID hit, the food industry was basically shut down along with the truckers. Isn't that intriguing and interesting? And then the food started to disappear on the shelves, especially meat, alcohol, Lysol, hydrogen peroxide, toilet paper and paper towels, and cotton. All very interesting choices that disappeared. Anyway, this article by Lauren Wills says, Bill Gates is known for supporting sustainable alternatives to traditional animal products. We like animals, and we like cows, and we like pigs, and we like bacon and ham and pork. And this American way, you know, we put those slabs right on the barbecue in the summer. Hello, those steaks? Mm-hmm. But in a recent Twitter post, the vegan meat investor highlighted the importance of stepping away from animal agriculture, stating that the beef and dairy industries would rank third in greenhouse gas, GHG, emissions if all of the cattle in the world were to start a country. Well, we know the cows aren't going to start a country, but we could be seeing cows disappearing, horses, pigs, who knows, chickens. We could be seeing all those disappear as the New World Order's billionaires and multimillionaires who sail around in $659 million yachts and live on private islands and jet off and, you know, do their thing, telling the rest of the world what we have to do. Say, as Bill Gates did, if all the cattle in the world joined together to start their own country, they would be the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases, he wrote. His words were accompanied by a chart showing the countries responsible for the greatest number of gigatons, G-I-G-A-T-O-N, of carbon dioxide, CO2 emissions a year. It shows that China emits the most. China emits the most, and China unleashed the COVID virus. Well, isn't that interesting? And China is making billions and billions of dollars making masks for America, who they unleashed the virus on, and the rest of the world. They opened up 300 new companies, and Gates and Soros and all of Wall Street, is especially artificial intelligence and Big Pharma, are all linked to China, including the CDC and WHO. Isn't that all interesting? And they're all intertwined together along with Jeffrey Epstein. You all remember him, don't you? So that's all very interesting as well. So it says that his words were accompanied by a chart showing the countries responsible for the greatest number of carbon dioxide CO2 emissions a year. It shows that China emits the most, followed by the United States. The Republic of Cattle, the beef and dairy industries, ranked third, followed by India. Gates also shared a link to other mind-blowing climate change facts, which can be found on the Tech Experts blog, Gates Notes. In a recent blog post, Gates wrote about the grand challenges in stopping climate change, which include transportation. Isn't that interesting? Electric cars. Mention anybody remember electric cars? Electricity. Oh, yes. Remember Joe Biden and Obama, and they were going to skyrocket electricity? Well, it appears that's exactly what they're doing, along with fossil fuels and getting rid of fossil fuels and fracking and the oil industry and so forth. And agriculture, as Bill Gates is buying up all the farmland in the USA, and Ted Turner bought up all the ranch land, owns more land than any other American in the USA. Now he's in competition with Bill Gates, farmland versus ranch land, where we grow our crops and we take care of our animals. Isn't that interesting? Very interesting indeed. He noted, Bill Gates said, he noted that cattle are a huge source of methane. Oh, my gosh. God created all these living beings, including children. He also supports Planned Parenthood and funds them and supports them worldwide. But Obama somehow inserted into Obamacare secretly along with Biden as part of the global pre-planned, mandated, taxpayer-funded abortions worldwide paid by U.S. taxpayers without their knowledge, using their tax dollars to depopulate babies around the world born to poor people under the guise of saving the planet, saving humanity, and reducing poverty. Well, if you kill enough people, you're definitely going to end the population. And what better way than to kill off the babies needed to preserve nations, cultures, civilizations? Wow. Anyway, he noted that cattle are a huge source of methane and explained that when land is cleared for crops to feed the animals, this deforestation removes trees that pull CO2 out of the air, and when the trees are burned, they release all their carbon back into the atmosphere. Other elements of cattle farming are also damaging to the environment. The use of nitrogen fertilizer, for example, releases nitrous oxide, a GHG nearly 300 times more potent than CO2. Recently, Gates and a cohort of billionaires, including Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos and former New York City mayor and Bloomberg LP CEO Michael Bloomberg, invested in a genetically modified bacteria that could cut down on the use of nitrogen fertilizer, thus mitigating the issue for some crop farmers. No wonder Gates is buying up all the farmland. Gates is known for championing tax-savvy sustainable ventures and has supported many businesses working toward a vegan future. This is your future. If you live long enough to 2050, God's creation appears to be on its way out, and science and robotoids and humanoids and clones, transhumans, appear to be on their way in, along with molecular meats that Monsanto and Bill Gates and his billionaires are invested in. So those tasty steaks, you better enjoy them now. Or that bacon and that slab of pork, you better do it now, because your children apparently won't be enjoying it in the future. These guys are all into redeveloping the world in their views and in their eyes, playing God and kicking God and his creation out of the planet. He has also invested in startup company Memphis Meats, and he is, is invested in leading plant-based meat brands Beyond Meat. That's your molecular meat, yummy, yummy. And Impossible Foods, oh, goody, goody. That is creating cultured clean meat. Oh, so we're not eating clean meat. Although we have been doing so since God created Adam and Eve, and people have survived, and the population has increased, despite viruses, despite meat, besides poultry, etc. That has created cultured clean meat from animal cells, sparing the lives of animals and largely reducing the environmental impact of conventional meat production. No, they do not want to spare the lives of the animals because they believe they are producing too many carbon footprints upon the earth. In another article, CNBC, Bill Gates and Richard Branson are betting lab-grown meat might be the food of the future. So if you think all of this is for your benefit, how about their bank accounts? How about taking over the entire planet? How about redistributing the land, the water, the oceans, the lakes, the rivers, the reservoirs, the skies to themselves? Are they not telling you today that you cannot travel, that you cannot buy a ticket to go to a concert from Ticketmaster, that you cannot go to Disneyland, that you cannot go to the theater? How many theaters in America have been shut down totally? You can't go to the gym, you can't go to the salon, and you can't go to restaurants or bars. You can't go to the beach, you can't go to the parks. And you have to be locked in your home from certain amounts because COVID only comes out between, I guess, 6 p.m. and 5 a.m. in the morning, in California anyway. So stay inside because COVID will get you if you're outside of those curfew hours. It's so insane. I cannot believe what is happening and how the sheeple are believing these billionaires who are not scientists, virologists, doctors, PhDs. They are into making money and redistributing the wealth of the world to them under sustainable redevelopment to redevelop everything in their views and in their own ways using U.S. tax dollars, basically, that make them wealthy and U.S. customers and the rest of the world, who buy their product. Investors like Tyson and Cargill could put clean meat on grocery shelves within 3 years. Yummy, yummy. Traditional meat production is ecologically devastating, and a growing world population could make farm-raised animals' meat unfeasible by 2050. I want you to note that 2050 is a very important year to Bill Gates, George Soros, and all of the billionaires who are involved in the New World Order and the sustainable redevelopment of the world and redistributing the wealth to themselves. By the way, you may want to read my award-winning book, Obamacare, Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, on Amazon.com. Well, you can still get it. Published in 2011, it is a fictional adventure story, Orwellian-style, political satire that exposes depopulation and the redistribution of wealth. And in 2050, these billionaires behind the curtain, like in The Wizard of Oz, pulling all the little puppet strings, like we're all on a chessboard, you know, and they can spy on us, track us, see inside our homes, see inside our cars. Woo, everybody is spied upon now through our computers, tracking us through our cell phones. These are people. They aren't gods. They are people. People who discovered technology to take away your freedom, liberty, rights, and enslave you as one of their humanoids or robotoids or turn you into a cyborg or whatever they intend to do with all their new inventions that alter DNA and according to scientists and doctors, have a new technology. It's a trial and experiment to inject into you with chemicals that is, they refer to as gene therapy and gene manipulation, which they have unknown consequences, direct adverse health effects to human bodies, although they did experiment on ferrets and all the ferrets died. And the Democrat Congress gave all these wealthy people, big pharma billionaire CEOs, CDC, who all of these people gave them immunity from criminal, civil, financial liability for deaths and injuries for a lifetime of healthy people. And by 2050, the goal is to reduce the population by 90%. Ted Turner, who's a billionaire, stated many times, like on Charlie Rose or during interviews, that the population should be reduced by 95%, not 90%. So will these foods who are not God-created be non-nutritional? Because during the Clinton administration, he and Holder and his administration of Democrats attempted to make all vitamins and supplements prescription drugs, especially vitamin C for some reason. Interesting, is it not? Billionaires who, including Bill Gates, who said about the COVID vaccine, you have no choice, is not a politician. He has no authority over any human being. And yet he stood on the national stage on television and online saying, you have no choice. People with billions of dollars think that they are apparently, or appear to think they are gods, because their egos are so big, they believe they can buy anything and everything in the world and everyone, and that they can fearmonger their way into getting what they want by violating the United States constitutional laws, supreme laws of the land, of this great republic that is operated by the supreme laws of the land, that grant you, and never forget, a free will, a right to choose, and that includes opting out, liberty, freedom, sovereignty, rights, human rights, civil rights, constitutional rights. We, the people in America, are the government. Billionaires don't have any authority over us, but we have public servants in bed with billionaires in China and Iran and Russia and Ukraine who have made millions of dollars from these companies secretly and creating family dynasties that have been controlling our country for generations without the American people realizing what is happening to the people who are being enslaved by their own government and Wall Street and China and the CCP and manipulated and used and abused and denied the constitutional right to work, state right to work, human right to work and provide for the necessities of life, which includes shelter, which includes travel, which includes work, which includes operating a business, which includes health care, medicine. Under Obamacare, they rationed and denied all of these things to you, to we the people, to us. They created a them against a society. I wrote the very first blog exposing Obamacare as unconstitutional, sent it to every congressional member. Unfortunately, it was a Democrat Congress and Senate, and they said they didn't read the 2,700 pages of Obamacare. They didn't know what was in it, but Nancy Pelosi said they had to approve it rather versus read it before they could find out what's in it. And she and Obama said mandated taxpayer-funded abortions were not included when, in fact, it was included worldwide. Why are we forced to kill babies when it's against our morals, our ethics, our principles, our values, and our religion? We shouldn't have to pay to kill babies who are being aborted legally on Planned Parenthood's private corporation making billions of dollars funded by United States taxpayers and attempting to expand their business worldwide, making it a multi-billion dollar business selling baby parts, tissue, DNA, blood, whatever, from the bodies of dead babies or maybe live babies. We don't know what's going on behind those doors. And pushing for late-term abortions and infanticide, leaving babies to die after they're born, and using babies as their human commodities for human capital. And now we are being used as human commodities for human capital by billionaires and by our own government, who are denying us our freedom, liberty, and rights to say no, like Nancy Reagan said, just say no. So 2050 is a very important year to them because they also want to reduce the carbon footprint, carbon monoxide, at all the way down to zero, which means almost everybody must die, including all animals, birds, and humans created by God, in order to reduce the carbon footprint at zero. Billionaires, including Bill Gates, say there's no way to produce enough meat traditionally to feed the world's population of the future. Of course there is. You just have animals reproduce like God allowed them to do, male, female, hello. And for lab-grown meat startups going after $50 per pound foie gras, makes as much sense as the grocery store staples like burgers and chicken nuggets. Vegetarians have long touted the ethical environmental problems with meat production and consumption. So here you have it. We're going to have fake meat, molecular meat, protein, soy protein chicken, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in the future, and they say as possibly within the next 3 years. Investors aren't deterred by the challenges, with sustainability forecasts chief among their concerns and motivations. Scientists estimate the world population will reach 9.6 billion by the year 2050. This population will increasingly live in urban areas and have a rising middle class, both of which mean more meat consumption. According to the Food and Agriculture, United Nations world food productions will need to increase 70%. Feeding that many people with traditional meat production will require double the amount of deforestation, which will increase greenhouse gas emissions at 77%. So in other words, this non-nutritional food is going to feed 9.6 billion people by the year 2050, maybe. Because if they continue to destroy the economy in America, which they're doing, the energy industry, skyrocketing electricity, utilities, and gasoline, and next they'll be denying us the right to drive our vehicles unless they're electric vehicles, or else spy on us. I saw a bus that said you cannot ride the bus unless you're wearing a mask. They're using the mask and the COVID, it appears, as the introduction into this new world order, sustainable redevelopment of the planet, and denying freedom, liberty, rights, and sovereignty to the United States of America, including freedom of speech to President Trump and conservatives. Under which constitutional authority do any of them have to do so? Ask yourself that question. And why is 2030 and 2050 such important years to them? And on that note, we've run out of time. God bless you. God bless America. And remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. But together we can make a positive difference. Remember, you are never alone. When you believe in God, you trust God, not billionaires, not the government. Trust God and trust yourself and your instincts and do the right thing and speak up, stand up while you still can for freedom, liberty, rights, America, sovereignty, God, and fellow Americans. And God bless you and God bless America.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.